The South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms is, as far as I'm aware, a unique project. It is because South Africa's constitution, which came in 1994, very recently, put in a provision to encourage civil society to be involved in the process of developing the constitution. It's a very good idea, because often what's happened in contemporary constitutional developments, whether it's the United States or in Canada or in Great Britain, is that people have a sense that it's all happening between the courts, really done by the courts, and maybe at most with some discussion with the legislatures, but that the people and civic associations are effectively excluded from the whole process. They really have no way into it. Well, the South African Constitution in Section 234 expressly provides that that there can be the creation of what they call additional charters to give greater meaning to the broad language of the Constitution. And one of the leading judges of the contemporary period in South Africa is Justice Albie Sachs, who's just recently retired from the Constitutional Court. And he's an academic. And writing in 1990, he said that ideally in South Africa, all religious organizations and persons concerned with the study of religion would get together and draft a charter of religious rights and responsibilities. And then he said it would be up to the participants themselves to define what they consider to be their fundamental rights. So this is what's happened. Under the coordinating influence of a group of professors, theologians and law professors, down there, a conference was held at the University of Stellenbosch back a couple of years ago now, and I was fortunate to be invited as an outsider to come and give a paper on the secular, because someone down there had read my work on that area and what was interested in the implications of that for the South African religious discourse. One thing led to another. And that small conference became a very big conference at which over 50 different religious groups were invited to attend. And that included Tamils, the Jewish community, representatives of the Catholic Church, 30 Reformed denominations, the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, and all sorts of different groups, including the Zion Christian Church, which is the largest Christian group in South Africa. What's happened since then is that a truly astonishing group of religions and non-governmental organizations have been consulted. So we've consulted with the Human Rights Commission, National House of Traditional Leaders, the African Customary Religious Leaders themselves, Baha'is, Dutch Reformed Church, as I mentioned, the Black Evangelical Church, the Muslim Theologians, the Religious Education Hub of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, and so on. All with a view to explaining this now six-page draft to them and getting their input, making changes and so forth. And over the 2 years, the document has been in development and is now at the stage where we're ready to have signatories sign off on it, and then it goes to the government. And we're hoping it will become an addition to the South African Constitution called the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms.
Can I just ask you, does a change of government, a change of president, have any bearing on the work that you're doing? We have Zuma now.
Yeah.
Has that any bearing at all?
No. In fact, President Zuma is very favorably disposed to religion. Indeed, in South Africa, generally, one discovers a startling thing if one comes from somewhere like Canada, as I do. In Canada, the courts are very reticent to say positive things about religion. In South Africa, it's very different. The South African Constitutional Court has made statements about the importance of religion that are quite strong. They basically said that they recognize that religions provide in South Africa unique and important ways of delivering education and health care. They say that religion for many people forms not only their civic associations, their life in community, but forms their personal sense of right and wrong. They've said that. So religion is not, in some respects, in such a defensive stance in South Africa as it is in Canada. In Canada, our courts have never said anything as robust as that about religion.
You know, it's just interesting because there's been so much over the last how many years about the political side of South Africa. Mm. And sometimes you don't hear a lot about the religious, because the political kind of almost takes precedence. Therefore, when you hear something about a charter on religious rights and freedoms, it's like, right, a charter on that. After all that's happened politically, we're getting down to the religious side of it.
Well, there's real concerns in South Africa about the future of the country. When I met with some of the people in the ANC a few weeks ago down in Johannesburg, when we left Luthuli House, which is the headquarters of the ANC in Johannesburg, there was a very large demonstration coming up the street, which was held back from the ANC headquarters by a couple of city blocks. Wasn't allowed to come to the ANC headquarters in protest, but that was a very large black protest from the township of Alexandria, very angry people about the lack of services, lack of what they saw as basic treatment that they'd been promised, things they'd been promised by the government many years ago. I heard an interview recently with that wonderful man, Bishop Desmond Tutu, the Nobel Prize winner, who said, he issued what was effectively a warning to the government. He said, how long do you expect people to be patient? These people have been patient now for 15 years, really, and they're waiting to be accorded the basic things you said you would give them, housing, clean water, and accessible water, electricity, and so forth. It's not happening. And there's a lot of corruption. Money's been skimmed off the top, right, left, and center. And the people know it, and they're furious about it. They anticipated that with black leadership, they would have fair treatment, and that has not happened. And they're now increasingly frustrated. So the religions now, in response to this, know that in some respects, the culture is very tense. They know it is on increasingly thin ice. They don't get much ice in South Africa, but they know the expression. Mm. And so there has been a maturity of cooperation, call it that, that I've never seen anything like it anywhere else. That first meeting in Stellenbosch with the 50 different groups, as we went round the table and explained the first draft of the charter to them, they agreed with not only the contents, but the process. And by the time we'd gone around the table, and the Jews, and the Muslims, and the Tamils, and the Catholics, and the Protestants across a wide variety had agreed 100%, I had shivers going down my spine because I thought, this is an extraordinary moment, historic development in this, potentially in this country. And we'll see. Years of work now have produced this draft, which contains some language in it that I've never seen in legal documents anywhere else, written by the religious groups or done in cooperation with them, that we hope will now become law. I mean, may I share a couple of these provisions?
Absolutely.
It begins, the preamble is, I would like to read the 8 short propositions in the preamble because I think they're very significant. And they'll resonate with an audience that understands Catholic social thought and conceptions, as they will within other religious traditions as well. The first statement, whereas human beings have inherent dignity and a capacity and need to believe and organize their beliefs in accordance with their foundational documents, tenets of faith or traditions, and whereas the capacity and need, this capacity and need determine their lives and are worthy of protection, and whereas religious belief embraces all of life, including the state, and the constitutional recognition and protection of the right of freedom of religion is an important mechanism for the equitable regulation of the relationship between the state and religious institutions, and whereas religious institutions are entitled to enjoy recognition, protection, and cooperation in a constitutional state as institutions that function with jurisdictional independence, and whereas it is recognized that rights impose the corresponding duty on everybody in society to respect the rights of others, and whereas the state, through its governing institutions, has the responsibility to govern justly, constructively, and impartially in the interest of everybody in society, and whereas religion, I love this clause, 7, whereas religious belief may deepen our understanding of justice, love, compassion, culture, democracy, human dignity, equality, freedom, rights and obligations, as well as our understanding of the importance of community and relationship in our lives and in society, and may therefore be beneficial for the common good. And whereas the recognition and effective protection of the rights of religious communities and institutions will contribute to a spirit of mutual respect and tolerance among the people of South Africa, therefore the following provisions, and then follows 5 pages of dense legal.
With a document like this, How much of it do you envisage being plain sailing, and how much do you envisage being stumbling blocks?
Well, so far, I mean, the stumbling blocks and discussions were in a sense behind us, because we're very close. We've got the summer, northern summer ahead of us here. And then we move in through the World Cup and all the soccer and so forth. We move through to the fall, our northern fall. And the hope is that on 2010, they will have the signing of this document. The difficult period follows what the politicians do with this document. They'll be faced, after all, with a document signed by every major religion and some of the senior NGOs, like the Human Rights Commission and the Culture, Religion and Language Commission, and perhaps the South African Broadcasting Corporation Religion Group. All of them will be signatories to this. So really, it represents the civil society view. The government then has to decide, well, this is a great opportunity for us to recognize what civil society has said and cooperate with it. I think it would be difficult for them to change it too much, or they potentially would lose the signatures, and it would create an embarrassment for them. So my hope is that the ANC will recognize that this is a genuine process that has actually involved African customary religions as well, and some of the leading groups that they themselves established, and therefore it should be agreed to without major tampering.
When this document is signed, how would you describe it? How would you think you'll be describing it on that day? Courageous, kind of far-sighted? What kind of words do you think you'll be using?
If it gets signed, well, when it gets signed in October, if the signatories are as broad and as deep as we hope they will be, I think it will be a remarkable example of civil society cooperation between religions. One of the arguments in our contemporary age from atheists and agnostics, particularly the militant atheists, the fundamentalists, the more evangelical atheists, is that religion is always the source of discord and disagreement, that it's always the source of violence. And I think the experience in South Africa has shown quite the reverse. It has shown that religions have the capacity to work together, to work well together, to create documents about the common bond of citizenship and the common good that are unlike any kind of human cooperation that we see in the world today. So the religions, when they can function well together, and they can be a genuine example to the surrounding cultures and other societies of how it should be done at its best. And I think the South African example, one of my friends in Canada has referred to this as an epoch-making document. I'm not sure I'd go that far, because it hasn't become law yet. Mm. But even the process to date, how it's been followed, the groups that have been involved, have been, I think, a real example of what's possible. And I know from conversations with a few people in Canada that we don't have the same constitutional provision, but there is interest in an interfaith approach of this sort to try and articulate the concerns of religious communities and what they feel they can contribute in a principled way to development in a country such as Canada. And it could be done here.
So it could be kind of like a blueprint, as it were.
Yes, it could be. And I think the principles with respect to the accommodation of religion in relation to health care, in relation to education, the parents' role in education, and so forth, I think those principles are very exportable. They'll have national application. But I hope that this work in South Africa will be taken up and used in other countries. Mm.